Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the program. My name is Simon Barrett, and as always, I'm joined by my most excellent panel from the fastest shrinking city in the U.S., Youngstown, Ohio. We have author, activist, and barkeep, Sam Murphy. Sam, welcome.
Simon, thank you for that most excellent introduction. It's a pleasure to be here the Sunday before Christmas. As I told the panel members, Thursday we had a high of 12, and today we're going to hit 70 degrees in northeast Ohio. So on Thursday, I didn't believe Al Gore. Today, I do believe in Al Gore.
is it true that moving vans just leave Youngstown rather than arrive?
Well, where I live, there's a waiting list to get into Poland Village. If you'd ever Google Poland Village, you'd see that. I'm very proud of that. But the city itself, those that can afford a moving van can get one moving van. Most people are in like a truck that looks like the Clampets from the Beverly Hillbillies to get out. But there's the only place, where can they go? They can't afford to move into the suburbs. And maybe the edge cities are experiencing some, but that's another interesting thing. The edge cities, and what I mean are the inner suburbs, are experiencing a serious problem because the flight, both white and black and Hispanic ghetto flight from the city has gone into the edge suburbs, and they're bringing all the problems. You know, the Section 8 housing, the no jobs, everybody's, and it's having a really bad ripple effect. Very similar to what happened in Detroit, and I think in other cities, Gary, Indiana, and I think a heck of a lot of other cities out there that are experiencing it. And going from there, here in Youngstown, we get the spotlight sound on us because of our unsavory reputation.
Well, I think it's splendid and definitely a subject that it is worthy of a program all by itself. However, also joining us today from the City of Angels, we have well-known, well-respected attorney Peter Haven. Peter, welcome.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, and happy holidays to everyone.
Right.
Even those in the shrinking town of Youngstown.
I'm assuming that L.A. isn't shrinking.
I doubt it. I think the city expands by the minute, I always tell people that every year when people watch the Rose Parade on TV and they see how bright and sunny it is here on New Year's Day, they all decide to move to California that day. So the population swell.
Unfortunately, this week, we are down a panel member. Bill Conrad is feeling under the weather, or he's been beaten up too badly by us three. And wants to lay low and regroup. So I want to kick off with a story that we touched on last week. I don't want to spend a huge amount of time on it because we could talk for days. Sam, how is the court case coming along?
We have the federal lawsuit has been served on the city, the law director, the city council people, and all the defendants, which also include John Doe's. And now we're in a wait-and-see mode because on Friday, this coming Friday, the new mayor takes office, and he's yet to name a new police chief and law director, but it appears the two people that who would be involved, defendants in my case, will be defendants not as government employees, but as people looking for jobs. Rumors have it the new mayor-elect is not going to retain Mr. Ferris and Mr. Foley, It's a good thing for me, bad thing for them. It's actually a good thing for the people of Youngstown, too. So that's where we're at right now. And meanwhile, I continue to, and with my lawyer, work on getting discovery questions ready and things of that nature, and help them as they need me, and run around, make copies of stuff, and that's it.
Peter, there's a rumor, and I'm wondering if you have heard about it, that from, you know, starting in 2014, court cases are no longer going to use the name John Doe, that they're going to use John Boehner.
Well, if that's a rumor, it's news to me, and I always thought the John Does were here to stay. So I haven't heard that, but nothing surprises me anymore.
Yeah, I can just see the documents now, you know, Boehner's 1 through 10.
Well, whatever name does the deal. In theory, people can use whatever name they want. They don't have to use Does. Does are just the most popular. Sometimes in cases where there's cross complaints being filed and a number of people being named fictitiously, you start getting Rose, R-O-E-S, and sometimes I've even seen Moes, M-O-E-S, but it starts to get crazy at that point.
Peter, should we have been politically correct and named John and Jane Doe?
No, don't do that. not unless you, you just named them as Joes, as Does, D-O-E-S, so I don't think it matters.
Have you ever seen, I'm not being funny, have you ever seen a Jane Doe, or just John Doe?
I've never seen him actually use a first name. It's always just referred to as Does, D-O-E-S, and then they add the name later and they include the full name. I don't see them use first names to designate gender. They just go by Does.
Well, surely Doe by definition would be female.
Now we just crossed into, we went from jurisprudence to the animal kingdom is what happened there. And now I think about all these great lines from Bambi that I remember.
Okay.
Who was it? Here's a trivia quiz. Who was it in Bambi who said, "If you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all"? It's a trivia question. Everybody thinks they know the answer, but they really don't.
In Bambi?
In Bambi, that was one of the lines. If you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all.
Jeez.
The
only
the
Bambi
NSA?
Thing I ever saw was Bambi versus Godzilla.
Well, there's a good example of it. Let's see, if any of our callers know the answer to that trivia question, they can call in. Who said in Bambi, which character said, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all?
Perfect.
Well,
okay.
We'll see if we get one caller on that.
Right.
What do they win? A bucket of wings from both places.
Yes, there we go.
With free shipping and handling?
Yeah. Free shipping. No, they have to pay FOB.
Okay, let's move on. Earlier this week, I sent the pair of you a link to Wastebook 2013, published by Republican Senator Tom Coburn. In it, he details wasteful government spending. It makes for fun reading, although I sense there might be just a slight skew to the right and, the blame game going on. He kicks off with an interesting observation. When the government shut down, and, non-essential workers were laid off. Many of the non-essential workers, 35,000, I believe, were earning more than $100,000 per year. And, you know, that adds up to a lot of money. But what he also says is that the 35,000 100K plus employees was just a sampling. That was just from three agencies. And, you know, when you actually look in bigger terms, there was way more. And so $400 million was paid out to people earning more than 100K for staying at home and watching Jerry Springer. I mean, Sam, this doesn't sound right, does it?
No, of course not, but it doesn't surprise me. It's been going on for, since the 50s. There was a great senator. His name was Everett Dirksen. I think he was from Illinois, Republican, a conservative guy, but really actually believed in small government accountability and whatnot. He's the one famous for saying a million here, a million there. Pretty soon you're talking about real money. That was his famous quote. Now, of course, it's a billion here. You know, you're talking probably, we should say, a trillion here, a trillion there. And he used to talk about waste. And that was the one thing. He was the first guy to really start doing that. I'm sure others have done it over the years through the Senate or the Congress or the presidency, but no one does anything about it. They talk about it. I mean, I read that report. I wanted to, you know, the senator should be applauded for having him and his staff look at this. The problem is they don't do anything about it. You know, we laugh about it. We hear about it. This government shutdown, we know, was absolutely just stupid for many, many reasons because all these people are going to get paid anyway. When you see the wringing of the hands and the gnashing of the teeth and the tearing of the clothes of all the people in government who were laid off for 16 days, in reality, they really get a 16-day vacation because they all got paid with perks and bonuses and all that. And you know, so that doesn't work, and it's not explained right to the American people. But what scared me about Colbin's report is it was only, what, 2-3 pages long? And you talk about the tip of the tip of the tip of the iceberg. That's what that is. And when you start realizing, you know, well, there's 100 senators, there's 435 House of Representatives, plus the executive office and the courts. You know, there's waste everywhere and corruption and graft, and it's just on a magnitude that we can't fathom. And when a U.S. senator can point it out, and it just gets some chuckles on the national media, you know, excuse me, when Duck Dynasty is more important than the waste in government and trying to curb it and change it and make the world a better place by not waste, you know, and getting that money to where it's supposed to go, what do we do about it? I mean, I was appalled when I read that.
Right. And, Peter, you know, I'm sure you would love to have been furloughed. You know, I believe the average payout for these employees was $4,000 for you know, not going to work for 16 days. I mean, doesn't that just you know make you grumpy?
Well, there are a lot of things that make me grumpy. I actually get grumpy when I paper and I read that some crazy athlete just signed a contract that's going to pay him $25 million a year. I get grumpy when I read that there's some, you know, chief executive officer who's paying himself, you know, $10 million a year and then giving himself an exit bonus while he gets fired. I get grumpy when I read about, you know, the former owner of the Los Angeles Dodgers who ran the team into bankruptcy and then got paid about $800 million or something to be bought out. You know, everywhere I look, I see excess, I see waste, I see people earning money that, in my opinion, they don't deserve. I don't know where to what to do about it or where to draw the lines. You know, you've got some federal employees that were paid, you said $4,000, Simon?
Yeah, it was
$4,000 for 16 days worth of being temporarily furloughed because under the rules of Congress, in the event of a government shutdown, these people were deemed so-called non-essential workers. I mean, I don't know what's excess and what's reasonable. It just seems like it's all sickening to me. And I can't for the life of me figure out what, if anything, could be done about it. You know, if human beings are human beings. There's waste and there's greed and there's, just like Sam said, there's graft and corruption as well, everywhere.
Okay, but wouldn't you assume that if someone is earning $100,000 plus a year, they would have to be fairly essential?
Well, I mean, I don't know how you define essential. If the government goes into a budget crisis and it has to maintain some sort of minimal level of functioning, then apparently there are some people who are deemed essential for some minimum level of functioning and some who are not. But we would have to know more about this definition of essential, and it's not an ordinary definition of essential. You know, we talk about our day-to-day lives and we say, well, this is essential. Well, actually, look at that. Why don't you look at your own lives and see if you can define the things that are absolutely essential for you to function and the things that are not, and how much money do you spend on the things that are not essential, but you spend them on it anyway. Just in our own personal lives, so too it is with government. There are things that you guys, everybody, pays for on a regular basis, probably on a monthly basis, and you pay it out month after month after month. I'm thinking of cable TV and internet usage and cell phone, and I don't know how many of these things are essential. I don't know. The point you raise, Simon, is a good one. You think at $100,000 a year they would be necessary for government functioning, but I don't know what to make of any of it because I don't even know if these numbers are accurate. We're just assuming the truth of these numbers, and that always raises a red flag for me. Why should I assume that something that's been reported in something is accurate? I'm not saying that I can prove it's inaccurate, but I don't ever accept the truth of what's been reported to me. Unless I have good reason to believe it.
And Sam, any comment on Peter?
No, I think one of Peter and I are on the same page on this. I think you are too, Sam. I think most of Americans are. They just, I think they're numb to it. They're numb to these sort of numbers. I mean, Peter, you bring up some great points. Yeah, it's not just in government. I mean, Shin Choo Choo played for the Cleveland Indians. Not a bad outfielder. Just signed a $140 million contract for 7 years after he turned down one for like $180 million from the New York Yankees about a week ago. And that's how much money's in the sports and entertainment business. I mean, when you mentioned the ex-owner of the Dodgers, I worked for him, the McCourt, right? Wasn't that his name?
McCourt, Frank McCourt,
yeah,
and his lovely wife.
When I got out of Boston, when I went to Boston after, in 1982, after I was in graduated Wittenberg, I went up there and I worked for him as an apartment manager. And they had so many apartment buildings. And him and his wife were, they were the royalty of the South Shore of Boston with all their real estate. And he tried to buy the Patriots, he tried to buy the Celtics, he tried to buy everything. But, boy, they have a lot of real estate. But then when I read about what they did, and then when they took control of the team, and just amazing how both of them just treated it as their own, their own personal treasury instead of a baseball team. But a great franchise, by the way, and they ran into the ground and they just could do whatever they wanted because
got paid hundreds of millions of dollars to sell out. And another thing to think of is that when I think of the federal government. I know it's not accurate, but when I think of the federal government, I think of Washington, D.C. I mean, I worked there for 2 years, and that was the headquarters of federal government. And most federal office buildings that you will find in the United States, they're located in major cities, know, you'll find, I know federal buildings here in Los Angeles, there are federal buildings in Chicago, federal buildings in throughout major cities in the United States. And, you know, I just assume that most of the employees we're talking about are employees in major cities. And when you start talking about these kinds of salaries, you know, on the one hand, there's just a group of people, regardless of what walk of life you want to define them in, who make an ungodly amount of money, and I can't help but think at some level they just don't deserve it, but they make an ungodly amount of money. And, of course, you know, that has an inflationary effect on everyone. But when you talk about living in a major city, in a major metropolitan area, you know, in all honesty, $100,000 doesn't go very far. It really doesn't. I'm not saying that anybody making that kind of money would be poor, but, you know, $100,000 just doesn't go very far in places like Washington, D.C., and Los Angeles, and New York, with the cost of living being what it is. So, you know, where's the real waste? What is excess? How much is too much to pay these people? Are we paying so-called non-essential people too much by giving them $100,000 a year salaries? I don't know. I read about members of the police who work for years and years and years and get paid twice that amount and then retire at early ages and collect federal pensions and then do private work on the side and, you know, make triple income. You know, I don't know. I don't know what's reasonable anymore.
I think you could throw them into a smaller version of the overpaid athlete, the police officers you just met. Or how about the teachers who retire, grab their pensions, and then hire back as a instead of hiring a new younger teacher, they hire back the older teacher at a different classification in the public schools. We see that all the time. I have never seen so many double dippers, or heard about so many double dippers, all the time in the government, and that's bad because they're getting paid decent wages, decent pensions, decent perks. Wouldn't you want to see some other people do that instead of the same person getting double paychecks? Why not hire two people, or why not have one person retire and then have two new people come in? But there's no rooms. I can understand why the people in their 20s are just frustrated as trying to find jobs and whatnot because these other people aren't letting go. And
it's insane. It's sick and it's insane. And you have a small group of people who are making ridiculous amounts of money while other people are surviving with far less. And you know, I don't even know what to make of it anymore.
Peter, you bring
madness.
Up. I want to comment on your point you made about, and you're right, the cost of living in L.A., Chicago, D.C., Boston, you know, and other San Francisco, other big cities, is huge. And $100,000 really isn't that much money for them. But what I saw a study once, I can't remember where it was, is that how many of these government employees had a spouse who didn't have the same last name as the husband but was working for the government too. And I see that on a local level. Incredibly so. The wife does not take the new husband's name, keeps her maiden name. No one knows that they're married, but they are, and no one makes the connection. But they have two incomes working for the government, both making very, very nice salaries and bennies and all that sort of stuff. And that happens a lot at the federal level too. It happens a lot with elected officials too. The elected officials' wives or girlfriends, you know, or kids or whatever, do the same sort of thing. It's just greed. It's gluttonous. It's gone unchecked for the last 50 years. Not that it didn't happen before then. Of course it did. But it's just getting out of hand. And, you know, there's that old saying that I think you two have heard it, and probably people in the audience have heard it, bulls and bears make money, pigs get slaughtered. And we as a society, I think, are entering that slaughter pen. Because of the disparity of the wealth, and you know, I mean, I look at it. You know, if we forget about history, we're doomed to repeat it. I think we all believe that, and in more ways than one. But you know, there's such a disparity in income and what we pay people, and what some people can survive on, other people, you know, how they make ends meet is beyond me. Most people live paycheck to paycheck. It's almost like we're back in the feudal times. You know, I mean, we're all working paycheck to paycheck with small businesses, you know, profit to profit, and just barely scraping by, while the big lords and the ladies of the castle, regardless. They're making it no matter what. Simon, I'm sure you're going to make a comment that the Fed, everyone thought they were going to take the brake off the pedal of printing money, a.k.a. QE, quantitative easing, and all they did was reduce the printing of the money by $10 billion, and the stock market set records. So as my wife said, okay, the stock market and all their friends and families and buddies are making $75 billion. You're now freed up $10 billion. Spread it to the Main Street. Spread that $10 billion to Main Street for a couple months. Watch what happens.
Right. Now, I want to go back to the initial question. Peter, I know that you're going to take the high road on this. You know, in that it wasn't the employees that created the situation. It was the elected officials. So, you know, is there something that needs to change?
Well, there's always something that needs to be changed. Everywhere you look, anywhere you look, there's almost always something that needs to be changed. Whether it can be changed or not is a completely different question. And so that's the preliminary comment. But the second comment is, you say it was the elected officials who created the problem. Well, that is a fascinating statement. Let's just explore that for a moment. What do you perceive to be the problem? And let's talk about that. What do you perceive to be the problem? You know, at one level, you could say the problem was the government shutdown. Is that really the problem?
No.
No. The problem is what exactly? The fact that apparently we think that there are a number of government employees who are making $100,000 a year, and apparently they've been defined as quote-unquote non-essential, which is a different definition, as we've talked about, than many others. And apparently the suggestions being made that this $100,000 a year for these so-called non-essential government employees is too much money to pay them.
That is not what I'm saying.
Well, I don't. Then tell me, what are you saying?
All right, the shutdown was created by complete gridlock between the Democrats and Republicans. And
well, I would say it was created by the Tea Party, but that's a different.
Okay.
That's a different. But fair enough. The shutdown was caused by political gridlock, and the shutdown was nothing more than a ploy that lasted for, I guess, a little over 2 weeks, and I think everybody knew it was just going to be a ploy that lasted for 2 weeks. It was just a political maneuvering that really didn't go anywhere. Okay, so that's the shutdown. That's just politics. That's just guys playing poker with each other and checkers and chess and thinking they're smart, and really they're just blowing hot air. Nothing new with that.
All right, but you know, it's us little guys that pay the cost.
Well, yes, it's always the little guy who pays the cost. You know, Sam said something funny. He said it's like we're going back to the feudal times when lords and ladies ruled the land, and they had serfs and vassals beneath them. And all I could think is, well, that assumes that we left the feudal times. I'm not sure we ever left the feudal times. I think the feudal times just get transitioned from one mode of ownership and control to another. It just the rules change, but the game essentially remains the same, and it essentially is similar. So you know, the point I'm trying to make is it's very difficult to really pinpoint the problem. And if you can't really pinpoint the problem, it's very hard, of course, to solve it. And I think that the problem is widespread, and it contaminates and infects all human systems. People who have the ability to take more because they are they're self-interested, and they, even though they could quote-unquote share, they don't. They won't. They never will. And even though they could have an incentive to try to take less, they'll ignore that incentive by and large. And the flip side of it is, if you start helping people who don't have as much, then you get an equal amount of pushback because you decry the fact that so many people are getting free handouts and they don't deserve it and they're not worthy and they're subhuman and they don't deserve to be helped. At least that's the arguments that are frequently made. So, it's all an intractable mess as far as I can tell. And it's going to have to get, change happens when systems fail. Emperors in France were beheaded when their people decided that they couldn't take starvation anymore. Upheaval happens when the situations get so bad that some sort of change follows. And I don't know what that change will be, but, something traumatic is probably going to happen at some point. I just don't know what it is. And it's very hard to define, and, we keep going back to the same question. What exactly is the problem? The government shutdown is politics, politicians being politicians for petty, stupid, silly reasons, thinking that they're justified in holding up government because, they oppose some particular, healthcare measure or something, and in reality accomplishing nothing. The salary structure, I don't think the elected officials really have much to do with the salary structure. I think they're elected officials and that various layers of government arise, and the NSA, the General Services Administration and the accounting agencies, and they all do cost of living studies and they recommend certain salaries at certain rates. And, by and large, these recommendations and reports come in and, there are committees that look at them, and, unless there's something abnormal, they usually rubber stamp them. And every time these reports for salaries and raise adjustments come in, they're analyzed against cost of living information and finance and inflationary information. And, of course, in the backdrop, there's always somebody like me saying, why are we paying some guy $25 million who can't even hit a baseball without taking steroids? And, this guy who does whatever he does, $100,000 is not much for him to even live on in Washington, D.C. I mean, these are very tough things to try and understand, in my opinion. And I can't even begin to understand them, much less try to fix them.
Peter, I agree with you entirely. Sam, someone earning $100,000 a year in Youngstown likely would be pretty darn rich.
Yes. The cost of living here is one of the good things about living in this community is the cost of living is decent. You could probably make $50,000 a year here, some people do, and live really well. The cost of housing isn't that bad, and I'm sure there are $1 million home. Sure, there are people who drive really fancy cars, and people here do very, very wealthy. I mean, two of the richest people in families in America live here: Denise DeBartolo York, who won the 49ers, and the Caffaro families, which are one of the largest private-owned shopping mall magnates in the country. And we also have the largest firework manufacturers from this area, named Bruce Olden from Fenton Fireworks. I mean, there's a lot of dough around here too, but you could live pretty modestly here. You could pick up a house. I would want you to live there, Simon, but you could pick up a house in Youngstown for about $12,000, and a neighborhood wouldn't be so great, but the house would be solid. I mean, put up some, just get an armed guard, Uzi, and some other things like that, and you'd have a decent brick home. But
look. I've got something better than Uzi. I've got a wife by the name of Jan.
So it's all modesty. Like my son Josh lives in Riverside, California now, and working at the base, and he makes a decent salary being a Phoenix Raven and all that. But he can't afford to buy a house out there. you know, he's renting with three roommates, and they found a decent place because the Riverside is kind of bends over backwards for the base there and takes care of the people around there. But when he was at another base, he was living in North Hollywood, and he was barely making ends meet, and it was expensive. My son Jonathan graduated with his master's at SUNY, just got an internship in Phoenix. He's going to be out there for 6 months with NBC affiliate Channel 12, being a, you know, learning the stock trade from everything from videotaping to reporting and all that sort of stuff, and I'm proud of him. But he's amazed at what he was finding just online, what it was going to cost him to live there, and you know, what the salary he was getting paid as an internship with Gannett. Because he's being in New York City, you talk about expensive. Holy moly, you know, what it costs to live there. You know,
yeah.
It boggled my mind to figure, you know, and I'm sure there's immigrant families, illegal and legal, living 6, 7, 8, 9 in some sort of small apartment or a small house, and you know, in the LA area, they're all working, they're all doing what they can, and probably at the end, you know, on Christmas Day, they're probably they're lucky can share one little present and you know, one night dinner. And they live to work and work to live, as the saying goes. Yet, I know when my son Josh was working part time for a security company, and he had to work, and he sat in a booth in one of Larry Ellison's 9 houses around the world. And he was told by his boss, this is a couple of years ago, and what my son did, he watched the sprinklers come on and on. Ellison hadn't been in the house in 6 years. Yeah, he still owned this house of, like, you know, 50,000 square feet. I forget where, you know, and this and that. And that was just one of many homes he has. And, you know, is that how many homes does a guy need? How much dough does someone need? And as Peter said, there probably is an answer to that, but you're not going to hear it from them, and they're not going to share it with anybody. And if they do share it, it's going to be tax advantageous to them because they don't just give it away. They don't. I think the robber barons of the years past were probably more generous in giving back into the communities. They built libraries. They built things of that nature. And I think they left it. Someone in Pittsburgh told me, who was it? Carnegie. Yeah, he raped and pillaged and child labors and all that sort of stuff. I'm not going to say this guy was a saint or anything. But when he left money to form the library and museum in Pittsburgh, he thought they would never have to have, that would be it. He left a bunch of money, they'd live on admissions, and that would be the end of it. Little did he know, not so much the library system would then morph into something that the taxpayers have to subsidize. And that these library systems around the country, because they're subsidized by the taxpayers on top of all the monies that were given when they were started, are sitting on tons and tons of cash. In Mahoney County, our library system has $46 million in cash. $46 million. Okay, and by law, they're not allowed to loan it to the county, or give it to another political subdivision, help somebody out, do anything. They just sit on this money. $46 million. The director of our library system makes $200,000 a year. To me, that's what, you know, and here we are in the year 2013. Not many people are going to the libraries anymore. I don't know how it is where you live, Simon, or where you live, Peter, but here it isn't. And no one wants to change it. They build more libraries, 2 people go to them, they pay the librarians. And when someone speaks up, and there's been a few people who said, hey, wait a minute, maybe we ought to just have 2 or 3 libraries, and maybe the Youngstown State Library, we should help with, you know, we've got a library in downtown, we've got a great university here. Maybe we should scale back and only have a couple libraries, and because not many people take them books out. They can get them online. They can get them on Kindle. Let's chop it all up, and let's get that $36 million and spread it back and give it back to the people, or pave the roads better, or buy new, do something, hire a sexual offender officer or whatever. People go screaming. They go screaming mad. The library people, the library board, they will kill people to protect their fiefdoms, their political fiefdoms, and their patronage, and this and that. And it's You know, you can. I think, Peter, you bring up a great point. Even if you can identify the problem, and a lot of these problems to me are not the proliferation of nonprofits in our society today. When you and you identify it, and you've got to go, hey, we have to reform you. Sorry, guys, it was a great idea. Times have changed. You've done the wrong thing. You've got too much money. You're not doing the right thing. Try to change it.
Well, you can't. You end up in political stalemate or political fighting. It's impossible, not impossible, but it's very hard to make changes in a political environment that will push back and resist at every turn any way they can. Any way they can, they'll fight any way they can. See most recent government shutdown. But, you know, that's just the latest in a long list of the way people, push back or fight. And many people believe that's the American way. Of course you fight back. Of course you resist. Of course you don't accept things. You always stand up and fight, no matter how futile the battle is. You know, who knows? Who knows what to do with any of it?
And you know, we talk about these essential employees and all that, and we could probably make a list and go down it. But you know what really boggles my mind is we've had so many soldiers, men and women, come back from this war on terror. And like when my son was in Iraq, I couldn't believe what he was getting paid. And watch his buddies get blown up, do this, put his life on the line with all the other soldiers over the last since 9/11, and what they make compared to what non-essential employees make. I mean, you know, if you've got 400,000 non-essential employees making $100,000 a year, believe me, you don't have that many grunts out there in the military making us able to sleep, you know, and peaceful at night. They get paid diddly squat. When they come home, there's nothing there for them. We have to have all these agencies and people with good hearts and whatnot who donate their time, donate money to help people get their homes, changed for handicap because of how many kids are coming home with no limbs because of, the technology is so much better at saving them and they don't die on the battlefield. Those people don't get anything. All they do, that's very, very limited compared to what they've done for to risk their lives, limbs, and the whole family life and whatnot for us. And, the first people to spit on them and laugh at them is our own government. I mean, heck, they voted in that bill that was just passed to get the government open. They cut veterans' benefits.
They cut the money from the easiest political groups to take it from.
And isn't that terrible?
The political, well, that's democracy.
That's democracy, right.
That's one of the problems with democracy is that it the people who organize and lobby and petition and try to influence elected officials, whether it be with money or favors or what have you. I mean, that's democracy. Organize into a big group and then try to manipulate and control legislation and policy and budget cutting and pushing back. And you know, if you're sitting in one of those rooms and you're looking at a long list of things to cut, and there's a big group of people in the room screaming and yelling at you, well, you know, it's pretty hard to ignore them.
Well, you know, how about making super PACs illegal? Or you can have a super PAC, but all money has to go into government funds.
I think you have to get rid of the fact that Citizen United is out there and here to stay, and there's a Citizen United at the federal level, there's one at the state level, local levels. I'm sure both of you guys are outraged by how much money on a local election someone needs to raise to run for office at a local level is outrageous too. So it just multiplies, you know, as you go up the ladder, which makes it very difficult for good people, men and women who want to run for office, and maybe bring some change, and maybe or at least try to, and they can't. So what do we have? We have a re-election rate that the Politburo of the old Soviet Union would be jealous of with our incumbents. And once one political party takes control here in Mahoning County, we used to have a two-party system in, when the city and county was really running strong in the 50s because there was a strong union thing here from the steel mills, yet there was also a lot of steel mills. So there was still strong corporate local ownership. They worked together. So somehow that morphed into, when the steel mills closed in the 70s, to just one-party rule. And there is, you've never seen, and just like any other place, where there's one-party rule, Republicans too, corruption, corruption, corruption. That's all you see. And it gets to the point that, you know, we can't do it ourselves at the ballot box, where a democracy is supposed to do. You almost have to throw your hands up and wait for the FBI, which is a political organization too, to clean house. And that's pretty pathetic when local group, small communities can't police themselves politically at the ballot box or whatnot, and have to pray to a higher political power to come get them, thinking that, well, hey, the FBI, they're good, they're the FBI, they don't do anything wrong, they'll clean house. And they have their own agenda. So, you know, it's really tough.
Okay. I think we've beaten this subject to death.
Well, we may have beaten it to death, but we're going to revisit it constantly. I can assure you of that.
Yeah.
Oh,
I think it's something needs to be revisited constantly, Peter.
In fact, my next question is for you, Peter.
Oh, boy.
Did you see that China rejected 540 tons of U.S. Corn?
I saw that, and all I can think is, that's terrible. Now, the Chinese won't even take our corn, and, you know, they'll eat, you know, I just talked to somebody in China telling me about how they'll eat just about anything, and they won't eat our corn, and so now that's just going to get fed to us. It'll be fed to us. It's already being fed to us. So, you know, just another sign of the apocalypse, as far as I can tell.
Now, Sam, I'm not sure if you're up on this story. Monsanto loves to create GMO stuff.
Right, that I know.
Right. And you know, apparently some GMO stuff made its way to China, and they went, oh, no. We don't want this. Thank you very much.
Well, apparently, some types of genetically modified food has been approved, and apparently, this particular batch that China rejected just hadn't been approved yet. Now, I don't know when it's going to be approved or what it takes to be approved, but. You know, the bottom line is this just looks like some sort of bureaucratic glitch to me. This one's not on the approved list yet, so we're sending it back. But as soon as you get it on the approved list, we're just going to let it in, no problem.
Someone's hands didn't get greased.
Well, probably not. Probably not.
Or Simon would like to say, no ticky, no laundry.
But the whole notion that somehow, if it's genetically modified food, it's got to be approved. I don't trust the genetically modified food. To me, I don't understand why it has to be approved. And I think it's just ironic that if it's not approved, a country with, 3 billion people to feed is going to reject it. And yet, I can assure you that every day people are lining up in the grocery stores here in America to buy that same genetically modified food. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's a lot of it in our shelves and food stores that's not approved either, even though it's, I guess, in theory, not supposed to be there. I'm sure it finds its way in there somehow. I mean, heck, it found its way on a shipment to China.
Okay, but Peter, I thought you were very much a quote, natural guy.
Well, I am. I mean, I believe that we're contaminating our people, and I believe that the sources of food that people are feeding citizens all over the world is basically killing them, in one form or another. And it's subtle. And I would prefer to avoid any of these kinds of food stuffs. But it's not going away. It's big business. There are a lot of mouths to feed. And for every person you try to help by saying, don't eat this, don't drink that, there's someone who will scream back at you, I don't care what you say. I'm going to eat what I want and drink what I want. You can't try to help me. I want to, you know, do this, do that. And, you know, it's just it's another version of the same theme as before. It's a hopeless, endless problem that you can't solve. So all I do is, you know, I try to avoid this stuff when I can to the best of my ability. But you know, there's no way of assuring that just because I read a label, it means it's accurate. You just do the best you can. What else can anybody do? This genetically modified food is not going to go away till people start being born with horns coming out of their heads. And even then, someone will say, oh, that's not the food. That's because you live next to a power line. You know, and who knows?
Good one. Any last comment on that, Sam?
No, I think it's just, you know, look, it's corporate America, Monsanto, all the other ones. They'll find a way to slip that food into China, Russia, wherever they America, and that's all that's going to happen. And you're just going to see it, if it can be done cheaper, whatever way they want, they're going to do it because it's going to increase the profits, and that's all they're about, is making profits. So whatever way they can make profits, they got to make profits, see those stocks go up, give themselves huge salaries, perks, benefits, just like the politicians and the athletes, I mean, the movie stars, the business, all the ones at that super top level, they're all interchangeable. I mean, they do the same thing. It just, you know, it doesn't surprise us. I mean, you know, I used to believe that, you know, and trickle down. I don't mean in the trickle down economic thing, but the more everybody up at top did well, they wanted to build factories because they wanted to make more money. They had a factory produce things. They'd have to go hire people, and you know that. And those people worked at the factory. We want to get a wage, you know, and all that sort of. I used to believe in it, and I think at one point the country used to run that way, but it stopped. For somehow, it just stopped, and it just we talk about this all the time, and we'll continue to talk about it. Greed, 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 and then to the point to our government. Has actually made it, you know, for some people, because the job market is total and transformed, there's really no jobs out there, you know, like there used to be. I mean, and it's probably easier for people to stay on unemployment and welfare than to get into a car, look for a job. It's probably more affordable for them because they don't have to get into a car, spend gas money or public transportation money. The check comes to them, and they can sit at home and, you know, whatever, you know, and... And I hate to say that, and it's not just we've created a whole cycle of that. It made it easier for people to not do anything. I mean, why should they? Why should they? I think Peter, you brought up, you know, the French Revolution. When that time comes, and I always think it's coming, more so now than I used to in the past, because the top was so top heavy. And the pendulum has swung so far for this income distribution and how difficult it is that, it's going to be a revolution. You know, I always likened it to, did both of you see the movie The Titanic that came out 10 years ago?
Yeah, when people in the lower cargo holds got flooded.
Well, the first thing they do, now the boat's sinking. It's my favorite part of the movie. The boat's sinking. They know it. They know they're in trouble, and the steerage comes in. They weren't even in third class. They were in steerage. They go all the way up, and the first thing they do, they run into that beautiful stateroom. They go, wow, first class. And
yeah.
They're still shocked. I mean, they just could not believe how people live like that. And I think that, in some respects, the Titanic is what our country is right now. It's first class, second class, third class. You could go fourth, fifth, and sixth, but we'll just lump them together as steerage. Then you have the people on the captain of the boat, the politician, the people who work it, are the government and whatnot, bureaucrats, and let's face it, when the ship sinks, there won't be enough lifeboats on. And I know it's the simplest analogy, but you can almost see that. Because I am amazed at the class difference that I, over the last 10, 15 years, and I consider myself a solid middle-class guy. I used to grow up in a middle-class family, provided as a middle-class family, as a small business person, as an author and all that. I am amazed at the income, the difference in the classes, how the rich have gotten richer and the poor have gotten poorer, and the middle class has been squeezed. And you see it. It's right in front of your eyes.
Is a huge disparity between rich, middle class, and poor.
I think it's the biggest it's ever been since they started, since neutral agencies started charting it.
Yep. Absolutely.
I think it's the largest it's ever been, and you see it, I think America can be summed up in this phrase: if you got it, flaunt it. That's what we see all, and I think we talked about this after Thanksgiving, guys. Stores opening up the eve before Thanksgiving, on Thanksgiving. The hell with the holiday of the family being around and people coming home for that holiday and eating and having a festival time. You saw the stores opening up, and as I predicted on the show, and I'll predict today in the future, next year, maybe the year after that, the stores will be having buffet dinners to entice shoppers to come in.
Oh, I'm sure they will. Hey, there is a subject that I really, really want to get onto, but just before we go there, I want to know if either of you have any comments about the diplomatic incident involving the Indian diplomat in New York.
Boy, that is really a very... I've read about that, and I still can't quite figure out what on earth is going on. But Simon, why don't you give us an intro as to what you understand this whole incident is about? Because I must admit, I still couldn't understand why they searched her in the manner that they did. But why don't you see if you can give us some insight?
Oh, I'm not sure I can. Okay, it is this Indian diplomat. I don't know how old she is. Don't even know her name. Apparently she got busted by the feds for not paying minimum wage to her babysitter, nanny, call it what you will. And they arrest her, strip search her, and it's caused a bit of an issue. The Indians aren't happy. In fact, they put a bunch of bulldozers close by the U.S. Embassy in New Delhi and pushed the barriers to prevent car bombs getting close. It all looks stupid. I don't know who was riling who up. And, maybe it was just an overzealous NSA, but we'll get to that in a moment. Sam, did you see this story?
No, I was just worried that did this mean the end of call centers as we know them?
No. As long as they make money, it's not going to be the end of them.
I don't follow it at all. I think it's much ado about nothing, as Shakespeare would say. So they could recall the diplomats. Big deal.
My understanding of this thing is that this woman, and I think her name is pronounced Devyani Cobra Gade, and I apologize, Cobra God, I apologize because I know I've hopelessly mangled that name. And she's 39. She's a very attractive woman by her pictures. And she was a, she wasn't quite a full-fledged diplomat. She had lesser diplomatic immunity. Apparently she was some sort of consular official. And as part of being a resident in the United States under some sort of diplomatic or consular activities, I guess you have to agree to abide by certain U.S. laws, including certain minimum wage laws. And she reported that she was paying her Indian maid $4,500 a month, which would have been consistent, I guess, with some minimal requirements, something like that. I mean, you know, it's interesting that this came up because, you know, here's a woman who reports on U.S. documents that she's paying her maid $4,500 a month. Now, I don't know, is a maid essential government activity? you know, I don't know what an appropriate amount to pay a maid is. I don't know exactly what a maid does, but that seems like a lot of money. But maybe it's not. Maybe that's not much money at all. That's $50,000 a year, something like that. So really, that's a pittance. That's a pittance in New York or Washington, D.C., wherever this was. Apparently she was paying this, according to the maid, she was paying her less than $3 an hour and treating her to basically slave-like conditions. Now, this was the report that the maid made to U.S. officials. And it's customary under these laws, as I understand it, that this is a federal offense. And they can be, they face potential prison charges for this, depending on number of counts and amount and controversy, what have you, I don't know. And this woman didn't qualify for diplomatic, full-fledged diplomatic immunity. She qualified for lesser consular immunity, and that did not make her immune. And so they arrested her. And the head, I think it's a State Department official who took charge of this, is himself an American of Indian descent. And so that added another layer to the mix. And he arrested her. And I don't think there's any allegation that she was strip searched by men. I think she was placed in a holding cell, and it is standard operating procedure when you place any person in a holding cell, you remove any item from them that could be detrimental to the stability and the safety and what have you of all the prisoners in the holding cell. Now, I don't know about strip searches, but the U.S. officials say it's standard operating procedure to subject detainees like her to a strip search, and apparently this included a cavity search. And here you go. How to sort fact from fiction, how to sort the abuse from just following standard procedure. I mean, if the U.S. officials are correct that this is standard procedure and they do it all the time, what would have been the outcry if somehow she was given different treatment? I don't know. The U.S. official who supposedly was responsible for this arrest was adamant that he did nothing wrong, and he came out and fiercely criticized anyone who had any criticism of the behavior of himself or his department officials. So I don't know. I guess there are protests in India over this, and all I keep thinking about is reading about these horrific rapes in India over the past year or so. So, I don't know what to make of any of it, and maybe it'll all get sorted out, maybe it won't, and who knows what to make of it at this point.
The case kind of bothers me. Because you're right. It plays in a gray area about diplomatic immunity. As I understand it, she had consular immunity. What that means, I have no clue. Do either of you know the answer?
Well, I think full diplomatic immunity essentially makes you immune from the reach of United States jurisdiction. So if you commit a crime, as I understand it, you can't be prosecuted by U.S. courts. You can be prosecuted by courts that have jurisdiction over you, such as your home court, you know, the court of the nation in which you reside. But consular immunity is different. It is not full diplomatic immunity. And apparently consular immunity means that they are subject to U.S. jurisdiction, but only with respect to acts performed in the exercise of their consular functions. And apparently there was some argument that this was within the performance of her consular functions, and that's a little unclear to me. Maybe it was because she made reports as part of her consular function. She was required to make reports about what she was paying people who worked for her to make sure she was complying with U.S. laws, and maybe that's what brought it within the realm of the consular function. Maybe part of the functions were of these maids that dealt with her consular duties and helping her in some capacity in that way. I just don't know. But that doesn't seem to be – that doesn't – nobody seems to be contesting that as far as I can tell, nobody seems to be contesting the jurisdictional reach, the consular immunity, the fact that there is that the maid here was testifying and stating that that in fact she was being paid this paltry wage. Nobody seems to be contesting the violations themselves. Apparently, they're just contesting or upset about the strip search. And according to the U.S. officials, well, we locked her up, and when we lock them up, this is what we do. And, you know, I don't know if that's true or not. I just don't know enough about it. But the with respect to consular immunity, it did happen here in the United States, and I guess arguably it came within the exercise of her consular duties, so or functions, I should say.
Huh.
Maybe they'll, but I'm sure we'll find out the truth when the HBO movie comes out, and they'll make. You know, the emphasis will be on the search scene before she goes into prison.
Right. Oh, you can guarantee that will be well covered.
Well, apparently not so well covered.
Indeed, not so well covered.
Well, there we go. Now we've just taken a very serious situation, and I take full responsibility for it, and I've made light of it, so there we go.
Then, Sam, any final thoughts on the Indian incident?
I'm really not, you know, I listened to Peter talk about, I didn't really follow it that much. Like I said, to me, it was like, when I thought it was just, was it over? I don't know, I didn't follow it, so I really not, can't comment other than saying, I wish I had full diplomatic immunity.
Okay, so let's move on. There is one last subject today that we need to cover. It has been another unfortunate week for everyone's spy agency, the NSA, although some bonehead thought life was going to be good by running what was nothing like an infomercial on 60 Minutes. That would be CBS, 60 Minutes to be exact. We find ourselves looking at 60 Minutes. This is the third time in recent memory that in 60 Minutes has gone astray. Oh, let's see. We've got Benghazi. We have Jeff Bezos of Amazon, and now the NSA. Who wants to pick up on any of that?
I'm going to defer to the more enlightened members of our panel on this subject.
I think, you know, it's funny that, you know, today I had some more free time for not on a normal Sunday. I usually don't, but today I did. And I watched, I channel surfed all the mainstream media and some other things and was online too. And I was amazed that a lot of the people in government, Republicans and Democrats, are for NSA spying on everybody. I don't think they can, with all the lights that have been shined on the overreach of NSA, heck, they just got caught spying, the breaking news before the shipment went on the air today, was they were spying on Netanyahu, emails and phone calls, British intelligence and American. That we have been spying on everybody, our own people. A judge just ruled it unconstitutional, said it was overreached. I think we all knew that was coming when Snowden was verified that it was accurate and for real. We all knew it was coming, yet they continue to spy, they continue to lie. You know, we know there's drones out there. The whole thing, the whole 1984, has really come home to roost. And Brave New World, all those great science fiction novels that the three of us grew up and read, have really come home, and it's getting worse. And they are getting, I will give the media some credit to this time, they are staying with this story. They are exposing it. They are trying to educate people on it. And I think people just don't care. I think as long as they got their cell phones, as long as they got their, they can use them, they don't care what they're saying. Obviously, we've seen politicians send pictures of themselves. We do all the same people say stuff. There was the idiot that just said that stupid thing about AIDS on the Twitter account. People use this, the social media, and this would be inspired on. They don't care to be inspired on. They don't care what they say and share with people as long as they're getting their 15 seconds of fame. With all due apologies to Andrew Warhol. And that's what it's all about. And so they're going to let the NSA grow. I think it needs to be blown up and dismantled because we have an FBI. We have a CIA. We have a ATF. We have a Secret Service. What do we need another group for? We have military intelligence. We have the Homeland Security. What do we need them for? So I'd like to see get rid of it. And, I mean, it's a massive boondoggle of and it's got major, to me, it falls into the wrong hands of the wrong people in power get their hands on this stuff, what they could do with the information and manipulate it and expose it or whatnot that people don't need to happen, it's pretty scary. And I hope that I'm very grateful for Edwin Snowden. I thought he should have been man's time of the year. And what really scares me, they say he has millions and millions of other pieces of documents that are going to come out about how our government spies on us and what they do with that information. And I tell you, one of the things I'm not going to be surprised about is that the government gets the information and then probably sells it to, not to other foreign countries, but to probably corporations so they know how to target Sam Murphy send me stuff on what books I like. And then again, I get pop-up, I get emails from a company that... the mailing list. In this case, there'll be emailing list and things of that nature. So I like to see the NSA, be done. I'm sorry it ever came to light, but it did. And now we have to do something about it. And it doesn't look like our elected officials have the majority right now to curb it, reform it, make it better, or end it, because obviously they're benefiting from it.
Didn't a report come out earlier this week that tries in some small way to curb the NSA's activity?
Yeah, I think the White House actually originally, Obama has put the NSA on steroids. You know, Bush, all the other previous presidents have. No one's ever said get rid of it. They've all slowly but surely increased the funding and power of it since it was founded in the 70s, I believe. So, you know, you can blame Nixon, you can blame Ford, you can blame Carter, Reagan, go up and down the line. They all made this thing, they kept feeding the monster. Bush really fed the monster. Obama had put the monster on steroids, and that's come out. And that's a fact, and you know we have to, you know, I think some people are shocked by that. I thought Obama was more of a civil libertarian and this and that, but obviously he's not. You know, he's in government and they're control freaks, and they want to control everything their way. And there's no difference between him, his party, and the Republican Party right now. That they're the party. It's really, to me, there's no. They call themselves Republicans and Democrats. I really believe it's the party in control. They do anything to get reelected. There's a few disagreements, but for the most part, it's about they're the party in power, and they want to stay in power. That's why they hate the Tea Party on the right. The left hates the Tea Party. The right hates the Tea Party. Any movement that's bringing change, whether we agree with it or not, the party in power, which is the Republicans and Democrats, hate it. There was a time when the Democratic Party, which is now taken over by the far left, but when the far left was making its move and dismantling the blue dog Democrats, they used to call them, Democrats who were conservative, they've been wiped off the face. There's no conservative Democrats out there. That party's been co-opted by the liberal wing of the Democratic Party. The Republican Party is in the process of being co-opted by the Tea Party, as people point out, and we're going to have. And the vast majority, and neither one of them, both of them want to stay in power, so they're going to love the NSA. They love the NSA. And I until we have a real libertarian party that wants to curb that and do the right things and rein in government, international aid and stuff like that and not abusing power, we should not be surprised by any of this. I mean, you're not going to see this NSA reined in by the current administration, or they might tweak it a little to appease some of the friends on the far left, they're not going to do anything. There's too much power in it. I mean, how many jobs? I don't even know where the NSA is located. I mean, I know the CIA is at Langley. Where's the NSA located?
Everywhere.
And how many people
everywhere.
The NSA is located
in Wi-Fi.
Yeah, okay. And it's, and it's scary that, you know, because we, all of us need the high tech. The year 2013, we can't go anywhere without our cell phones, without our iPhones, cell phones, our computers, and all that stuff. So it's really creepy and scary that they're out there spying on everything we do. And they verified that. And they verified that when these guys have downtime, they spy on their spouses. And they see what their spouses are doing, and they're on porn sites. I mean, they're no different than the average American, for-profit workers. But, you know, is that what we want in the government, spying on all of us? And why are they spying on us? Well, I guess they think that, you know, we may be, we're a threat to the government, I guess, if we're going to raise up, are they spying on us because they think every one of us is going to grab our gun and our pitchfork and go march on Washington? I don't know. I don't know why they need to know all that stuff. Why do they need to know what are in my emails? And now they'll say, well, we have to stop terrorists. Well, that's okay until the definition of terrorism. And if they keep changing they keep moving the goalposts back on the definition of terrorism, we'll all be terrorists. And that way they can throw us all in the jail or, do what they want to do with us or label things. I mean, I thought it was outrageous a couple months ago when they said that the NSA was going to announce what porn sites some of these alleged terrorists were visiting in order to discredit them. I think we talked about that a couple weeks ago. That means someone's monitoring the porn sites. Is anything not sacred?
Best job in the NSA. Yep. Monitoring the porn sites.
Yeah, I mean, it just and again, I get scared about it because of how technology is so important in all of our lives. I mean, we wherever we go. I mean, I'm sure when the government with all its money and strength and resources and power, it can adapt so quickly to where culture changes. The rest of us, businesses and individuals and families, it takes a while for us to catch up. But you know, they're so big and powerful and strong. They can quickly. I mean, I'm sure when the NSA came around in the 70s, they knew that hey, computers were going to be the high tech stuff was going to be the wave of the future, and this and that, and they were ready for it. And geez, I'd like to see all those resources put into solving cancer, male pattern baldness, poverty and educating, all that stuff. Before, you know, but all the resources seem to go into controlling us.
Does this mean you're going bald?
Well, I'm 53. It's getting thin up there.
It's not so.
My granddaughter said to me that I had some, my ex-wife, it was like pulling teeth from her, but as for a Christmas present, my present wife, had some old VHS tapes put on the DVD, burned on the DVDs and gave them to her daughters for Hanukkah. So my ex-wife had out my tapes. It took for, like I said, it was pulling teeth to get them from her. I don't know why. And I'm giving them to my children for their Christmas presents. And my granddaughter, we got the first tape back the other day, and my older daughter was showing my granddaughter me, and when I was, my 30s, and the only thing she called me up, she goes, "Hey, how come you're bald on top?" Zadie, you were bald on top. What happened?
Oh, it sounds awful.
Well, you know what was really strange? I was the guy back in the 90s who you hated to see. I brought the VHS camcorder with me. Okay? To the events, I was I videotaped everything. Now, I'm so glad I did. Because 20 years later, we're watching them and everyone's in hysterics laughing. So, I don't even know where the camcorder is. I don't even own a VA recorder anymore. But boy, you burn them on the DVDs and what joy it's brought to everybody's eyes. So I'm glad I was the obnoxious guy with the camcorder 20 years ago.
Good for you, Sam. Good for you. You're preserving history, and you're right. They will appreciate it.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, and I would tell everybody if you have that, it's sitting there somewhere in your up on your shelf in your garage or in your basement. It's not that expensive to do, and boy, it's a hell of a lot better when you're looking at them 20 years later.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm looking at the clock. There is one more subject that I would love to talk about: Duck Dynasty. the absolute biggest crowd draw to A&E. Phil Robinson seems to have got himself in a bit of a to-do with A&E, over an interview he gave to GQ. Now, as I recall, GQ stands for Gentleman's Quarterly. It's a fashion mag for men. I mean, why the hell would they want to talk to Phil in the first place? I mean, he's hardly what I would call a fashion aficionado. Sam, did you hear any of this story?
I could not believe. It must have been the slowest news day in the history of mankind the other day when that was all over the place. And then I watched a little of it. I'd heard of it, but never watched it, and I watched 2 seconds of it, and all I could think about is bring me back Gilligan's Island and F Troop and Petticoat Junction and all the Beverly Hillbillies. Were terrible, but that's what type of society we live in. And then the side from the left hated them, the side from the right built them up, and then I thought that a light bulb went off in my head. I went and Googled Duck Dynasty, and I see that they have their own clothing line, food line, DVD lines. In other words, this is all about merchandising. Right before Christmas, And this is all a sham on the American people and shame on the media, because that's what's going on. Their sales at Walmart and everybody else is flying off the I see it all on the social network. Everywhere else. Show your support for Phil and Duck Dynasty. Go buy one of their things. Go buy a pair of his hip boots or something and whatnot. And that's what it's all about. I probably was set up to do all this stuff. They must be done. Once again, they're laughing all the way to the bank, and the suckers are the American people that would watch that show, because it's a reality television show, and that's what reality is. I mean, it's no different than what we've had: Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, we've had Real Housewives of New Jersey. Now, why not, you know, Real Crackers in the Mississippi? Where are they in New Orleans? Where the hell are they located? Aren't they crackers from the swamps of the
Of Louisiana?
Yeah, I mean, who cares? I mean, but, you know, what's next? But that's what our culture has sunk to. They've made a fortune off it. A&E's going to make more money. Walmart will make more money and all that stuff. Peter, I have a question, a legal question for you in regards to this. Everyone's screaming First Amendment rights.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the First Amendment protects me from, I can say stuff against the government. But if I have a contract signed with my employer, such as Phil had with Duck Dynasty, and I'm not allowed to say certain things, and I signed that contract, I violated my contract. I haven't violated the First Amendment rights. Is that correct?
Well, the way you've expressed it is, yeah, you've breached a material provision of your contract, and there is no First Amendment issue.
Right.
You can exercise your First Amendment right all you want, and there are consequences to that, and the government can't typically prosecute you for exercising your First Amendment right, but an employer can say, you know, we don't appreciate you airing your views on this subject, so you're done.
So in that way, the First Amendment would not kick in?
The First Amendment, basically, the First Amendment, like most of the amendments, really only applies to government activity.
Right.
It doesn't apply to activity between private people. The government can't do certain things because it's the government, because it's prohibited by the Constitution. But people are free to violate each other's, generally speaking, people are free to violate each other's constitutional rights all the time. I mean, you have these athletes who make comments about what have you, and they can be punished by the NFL for doing so. They can be punished by their teams for doing so. They're just exercising so-called First Amendment activity. But there are consequences to that. And in a free enterprise system, if you alienate a large number of your market and they don't like you, if your employer is trying to market that audience, they can say, you know what, we really don't want to be affiliated with you anymore. And you're free to express your opinion. Go get a soapbox and tell everybody all you want about anything you want. You've got a complete and unfettered First Amendment right. But, you know, as far as we're concerned, you're fired.
Now, that's
not what happened. That's not what happened with Duck Dynasty. He's been placed on some sort of hiatus. But you know, the idea is the same. They don't appreciate his comments. And he thinks he can say whatever he wants, and he can. But if you're going to say whatever you want, sometimes you have to live with the consequences.
I quite agree with you. You know, is it not also true that you lose certain First Amendment rights, you know, or possibly lose certain amendment rights when you sign a contract?
Well, again, I think it's really talking about apples and oranges here, because here's a classic First Amendment situation. You know, you want to protest something, so you go down to a street corner and you protest and you exercise your right to free speech, and the government cannot shut you down because you're exercising your free speech right. They can shut you down for other reasons. They can say, well, you're blocking traffic, or you're creating a disturbance, or you are doing something else. But generally speaking, they can't prohibit you. They can't punish you or prohibit you from speaking your mind about, you know, core political whatever speech, core political speech. But when you enter into a contract with a private employer, the First Amendment's got nothing to do with it. The private employer can say, look, you know, a large market audience that we have is X, Y, and Z demographic group. And, you know, you can think whatever you want about X, Y, Z demographic group, but we don't want you making comments about X, Y, Z demographic group because that's a large part of our audience. And, you know, if you're going to work with us, this is what we want you to do. And if you don't do it, then you're in violation of your contract, and we have appropriate remedies. Sue you for breach of contract, terminate you, blackball you, what have you. They're parallel doctrines, but they're more or less completely separate from each other.
Okay. We're flat out of time. So I'm going to go around the table. Sam, been a wonderful afternoon. Any parting thoughts for us?
Yes, I want to thank. Had a great time talking. I loved it. I think we hit a lot of good subject, and we're basically on the same page about it. And we'll keep talking about it, and hopefully solve a couple things, maybe educate a few people. And I enjoyed it. And I do want to leave. My parting thought is this: if Santa knows who all the bad boys and girls are, he must be in charge of the NSA. Merry Christmas to everybody, and I'll see you next Sunday.
Perfect. And Peter?
Well, it's a pleasure as always. I think we express a lot of opinions about things. I'm not sure if we solve anything, but, you know, talking about them is the most and the best step that we can take. And also, for those of you who wanted to know the answer to the trivia question, it was Thumper who said, if he can't say something nice, don't say anything at all, because that's what his mother told him. That's what his father told him to do. So there you go. There's the trivia answer for today.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for taking part in our program today. And have a great Christmas. And hopefully, we'll be back next Sunday, and we can do something really bad about 2014. Till then, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe holiday season. Till next week, goodbye.